Welcome to the Farm to Table Talk podcast, where we talk about our food system from what we eat to how it's grown. I'm your host, Roger Wasson. According to some reports, there are more young people trying to get started farming today than any other time in certainly recent memory. And across the United States, there are a small handful of programs and organizations trying to help beginning farmers get on their feet by learning what needs to be done to become profitable farmers. One of those programs is the Grange Farm School that is becoming the Grange School of Adaptive Agriculture. And I'm happy that we can talk about that today because I have the Director of Operations for the Grange School of Adaptive Agriculture with me on Farm to Table Talk, Ruthie King. Ruthie, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you need to explain a lot to us. I think I'm going to start with, what do you think is causing so many people to want to go back and be farmers? I mean, we've had 300 years in this country of people leaving the farms. There was a time where 90% of the population of America were farmers, and they've just been peeling off in droves. And something seems to be happening in the last decade or so where there's a lot of your peers, they're wanting to come back and would like to be farming out. How do you explain that?
That's a great question. I like to start by answering that question by giving just a brief history of the Grange and the difference between how young people got into farming 150 years ago versus how they get into farming today. We've seen some big transitions, but of course, history is repetitive. And the time that the Grange started was 1867, right after the Civil War. And there are a lot of similarities between those two times, a lot of big differences as well. The Grange started in 1867, right after the Civil War. There was a war-ravaged South, and Oliver Kelly went and did a survey of this area to see what the state of the farms and plantations were like. And, you know, he found isolated communities. He found farmers who were being taken advantage of by railroad monopolies, railroad tycoons. And he found that there was a real need for networking and community building and support for these farmers. So he started this organization. It was a secret organization back then called the Grange. And they were a completely grassroots democratic organization with a political lobbying arm meant to really help support policy and legislation that would promote small rural yeoman, you know, Jeffersonian style farming.
Let me interrupt you just a second there. Was it largely in the South initially?
It actually started up in New York State. So Oliver Kelly went to survey the South. He lived in New York. He came back to his home state and started the Grange there. But within the first 7 years, 1.5 million members joined. And Granges started up in almost every state. Mm-hmm. In California today, there are 176 Granges. So it's pretty much nationwide, and it did make its way down to the South to support those farmers. And it supported them in a huge variety of ways. First of all, and maybe some people today would say that this is the primary thing the Grange gives, which is just a community. They would have these monthly meetings and potlucks and come together and share information and sort of swap stories about the pests that year or challenges they were having with distribution, for instance. And they found really creative solutions that were essentially part of a cooperative farming economic model where the Grange halls were often centers that would store communal tools and equipment or have communal silos for grain storage and ethanol production. And so the Grange formed this foundation for these farmers, for these really rural, isolated people to come together in a central place. They all had a common cause and common lifestyle. And, you know, back then, the next generation took over the farm pretty fluidly. It was, you know, the family farm for decades, and the children would grow up in the fields and learn the trade by watching and then eventually doing and eventually inheriting. And that was the model for succession. Today, what we're finding is that that model is completely, almost completely absent. In a way, it speaks a lot towards our country and upward mobility and the ability for these rural families and young people to move off the farm if they so choose and to get an education and to decide to pick a different trade. We have a lot more freedom and flexibility today than we did back then, certainly. The Grain School of Adaptive Agriculture draws from the rich history and tradition of the original Grangers and really seeks to demonstrate those values on a farm and in a school context at every scale of our organization.
Do you have to live in California to be to be involved with this school?
Absolutely not. No, our you know, we had our first two terms last year. We graduated our first two classes of students, and the first term, I had a student from Rhode Island and a student from England and a student from Iowa, as well as a couple of Californians. So it's pretty broad, the draw, and our programming, you know, is intentionally this broad spectrum that teaches our students to make their decisions based on their local context, not only environmental context, but economic context, their social context. So, you know, the program teaches these foundational skills. We teach the science of soil. We teach botany. We teach anatomy, these really core foundational scientific concepts. And then we encourage our students to really define their own context, define their goals, their values, their principles, and to pick and choose among the huge array of different models for sustainable agriculture and to craft their own version of sustainable agriculture. It's only going to be sustainable if these next generations of farmers are, you know, feel ownership of it.
Now, one thing I wonder about is that when you grew up on a farm like I did, and you know, you went to not only had that whole farm experience normally, but you also were in 4-H, and so you had to keep records, and you were feeding your livestock or whatever your project was. And then you also were in FFA, too, so Future Farmers of America. You took vocational agriculture. But there's an awful lot of steps that a person that, again, grew up on a farm and maybe was in FFA and 4-H, whereas I'm suspecting that some of the people that would be in your program don't have any of that background, that maybe they've not even had a rural experience up to now,
right,
let alone have gone through 4-H and FFA. It sounds like the old-fashioned one-room schoolhouse, that you can have such a variation of exposure to agriculture. Is that the case? Do you find there's quite a range of people that would come to you that really haven't had much orientation, and that's kind of an introduction to agriculture versus some that actually, again, grew up on a farm and were in 4-H and FFA and a little bit more ready?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And wrapping around to your first question, why are all of these people getting into agriculture now? You know, I didn't grow up on a farm. I grew up in L.A. County, and I had hardly any connection at all to my food system. And it was only, you know, later in life, after a college education, I studied architecture and sustainable development and really just exposure to the world and exposure to, you know, some of the horrible things that are happening to our environment, that I found I needed to find a purpose. I needed to find my passion that would help to solve some of these major crises. And I think that that's coming often from urban and suburban areas. Rural areas are not able to produce enough farmers at this point, that, you know, so many people growing up in rural communities are just dying to get out of them. And so there's this backward sort of migration from urban areas and suburban areas, where people are disillusioned, they're jaded and upset with the way that the system is working, and they want to find a way to actively change it. And food is such a fundamental part of our lives. It's often, you know, our students, I call them leavers, because many of them have left a college education, or they've left a job that they've been working that wasn't satisfying, didn't really satisfy a need that they had to make a difference and to see a tangible change. And some of these students have found their way to agriculture through environmentalism, but many of them actually are finding their way to agriculture because of diet and health. And so I've had students, I had a student who last year who quit his job in the restaurant business. So he already had a connection to food preparation. His mother has an autoimmune disorder that's caused entirely by diet, and her medical care isn't really giving her the kind of advice that she needs about changing her diet, changing her health. And so he started doing his own research. And that kind of internal drive that people have to protect themselves, protect them family, their families, and to make sure that the people who they love are healthy and happy, often that's getting clued in to the food system. A lot of this next generation of farmers coming in didn't know growing up that they were going to be doing this. They didn't have exposure to 4-H and FFA, and they're wanting to kind of fast-track it. You know, they maybe have worked in another sector. They weren't satisfied. And when they realized that they would rather get into something with the land, at this point, we're so new, it's hard for me to generalize what type of student we're finding. But the more I meet this next generation of farmers, the people who are ready to jump ship from what society tells us we should be doing, which, you know, includes climbing the ladder and following the traditional path, they are carving their own path, and they're typically really creative, fringe, outside-the-box thinkers who are committed to finding their own way and to seeing a tangible difference from the labor of their life.
You must be familiar with Greenhorns, the film and organization website.
Absolutely. Oh yeah.
At Stone Barn Center, it's got young farmers getting trained. I know there's a sustainability program in Pennsylvania that's very interesting. But kind of across the country, there are different types of programs. Many of them sounds to me like that you're in a similar trajectory of helping people into this transition that weren't coming from a farming background oftentimes, but do want to find some way that they can be farmers and farm at this stage.
You know, one of the big challenges that I think all of these programs are finding is that training new people who have not grown up in an agricultural community really requires essentially some rewiring of the brain. When we're used to seeing the results of hard work and you plan and you get those results and, you know, any sort of challenge you have can be overcome with money or with time, the difference that you see in these students who are working with the land, who are working with natural systems and ecosystems and having to see slow change over time and having to be patient and having to recalibrate themselves midway through a season when they've hit a bump and, you know, they lost a crop to flea beetles or, you know, there's any number of environmental challenges that can come in. You know, I think all of these programs are finding we can teach soil science, we can teach, you know, record keeping and financing and marketing, but there's no real way to teach someone to be a good observationist and to watch the way the world is working around them and to react to it in a way that's, you know, natural and harmonious and sustainable. So the building in of sustainability into your mindset and humility, I think, is another big part of it, that we're just used to having things handed to us. You really have to be, you know, you have to be humble in this work. You have to recognize that, you know, the people who've worked the land before you are your most valuable resources and mentors. So this intergenerational truth-making is absolutely necessary for the next generation to recognize that, you know, the people who've worked the land before them are the most knowledgeable, amazing resources that they have, and they can't do it alone. In fact, I would never recommend anyone try and enter agriculture alone. You need a team, you need a network. And you need to learn how to open yourself up and ask questions, and not only questions of your community, but of yourself.
You probably also need to have to enter agriculture at some stage that's not going to require you to be huge. I mean, you know, it takes, if you're going to go start a conventional farm, you know, you would have to be able to buy $500,000 tractors and, you know, and get large acreage. And so if somebody's going to get into it, it also is a certain scale that they can enter, I assume. So that's part of, I'm not saying that very well, but it's part of the adjustment, I think, that, don't you, with your focus, that you have to help them be able to be more intensive or be more, how can they support themselves, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
Is that you can have the ideal and say, I want to be part of a healthier system. I want to stop having an hour commute and the terrible traffic on the 405. You know, all these other things that can motivate you, say, I'm fed up and I want to get out of here and I want to be my own farmer. But still, at the end of the day, within some period of time, you've got to bring in enough money that you can pay the bills, that you're, you know, buying more, you know, sheep or chickens or that you may get a tractor and so forth. So,
You know, I think one of the most harmful things to this movement of sustainable agriculture is the, you know, the people who think farming feels good and that's why they want to do it, and you know, that they'll start at a young age and they'll work themselves to the bone, you know, working hard, not making much return, and not being smart about the decisions that they're making, or, you know, or not learning to ask the right questions. And then at the point when they decide, you know, it's time to have a family or it's time to buy a house, they have to get out of the business. So, you know, I think that one of the most important things is to have a really deep understanding of what resources you do have available to you. And that's not only financial resources, but, you know, your network and the skills you have, the skills your family or your friends or your team and your community has, and really highlighting those skills as part of your model. So all of our students come through and we teach holistic management as a decision-making framework. And they all start off with analyzing their inventory, their management inventory. And that can be as broad or as specific as you need it to be. You know, what kind of financial resources do you have and who do you have in your arsenal that's there to help you? What kind of skills do you have personally? And then we go into defining their holistic context. So what kind of quality of life are they looking for? And what are the behaviors and systems that need to be used in order to achieve that quality of life? And I think just even that initial burst of planning and goal setting and understanding of what you actually have already sets you up for at least a closer, more direct way to success than floundering and trial and erroring for a few years. And the next generation of farmers has to be so creative in the way that they get into it. You know, hardly any of these people coming through our program, at least, have a nest egg big enough to start a farm at the scale that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. Some of them have a family farm that they might be able to inherit, but most of them don't. And, you know, we focus on financing, we focus on leasing. So we are pretty intensive with talking about these different models than the conventional land ownership model. There's also maybe it's not surprising, but I'm always surprised by it. There's a movement of people who are retiring who own land who would like to see their land stay in agriculture. And there are all kinds of programs and organizations that are set up to link together that generation looking to get out of the business but keep their land in agriculture with this new generation coming in who don't have the capital but have the sweat equity, for instance, or have the drive and the ability to apply for financing. And it's one of the most challenging careers to get into at this point, and there's not a whole lot of support out there from the local governments and from our national government. And that's why so many of these farmers who are making it are this completely incredible, creative, adaptive, you know, group of people.
Well, Ruthie, if you're involved with the school, say you're involved with another 5 years, How will you hope you can look back and have judged that you were successful, that you've how you've spent your time was a worthwhile investment on your part? How will you define success?
Yeah. What are my metrics of measurement?
I
have a lot of different ways of measuring success, and I think it's important to not have finances be your primary measurement, but it's important for it to be there. So for me, looking back, I would like the school and all of our graduates to be financially solvent, to be sustainable, and have the, you know, their source of financing match with the use, and to not have to blur the lines and have off-farm income if it's not part of your holistic context. And so I think that financial sustainability is a key one, but whenever, you know, whenever people ask about success, I try and add in all of the other more, almost more important things. And for me, the connections that I have with our graduates are the things I'm most proud of and feel most accomplished over. So that the 10 graduates from last year's program are doing incredible things and have this sense of confidence and courage to go out into a world and get jobs or start operations based on the knowledge that they gained here, which is, to me, the most incredible thing that we've accomplished, and I hope to do much more of it. This year, we'll be taking in a group of students in July, and next year, we'll do another of these really intensive residential programs. But beyond just supporting the next generation of farmers, I'm also really committed to supporting the current generation of farmers. So I've been committed to a workshop series here on at the Farm School. We cover a huge spectrum of topics to support current farmers and to teach them the things that they are identifying as important needs. And then finally, I would be remiss to not mention that number of tons of carbon stored in the soil of the pasture I've been managing is a huge measure of success for me. And I'm the livestock manager here, so I work with the pastured poultry operation, and we have a holistically managed sheep herd. We work with a herd of cattle on 1,600 acres here as well. So there's this amazing rotation that's happening throughout the property that's being orchestrated and choreographed in this way that is most beneficially impacting the grassland ecology and, more important, all of the soil microbiology. And the amount of carbon that we're storing in the soil and the amount of water that we're able to retain every year is another huge sense of accomplishment and success that I'm feeling. And we're only in the third year. So another 5 years, I can't imagine how how much more it'll be improved.
Well, you know, it's nice to hear that enthusiasm. And it's clear that you're excited about what you're doing. You feel good about what you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
Other people that want to know more about the program, or maybe if people want to apply to be in one of your classes, how do they do that?
Well, we just developed our new website with the help of a pretty amazing student who's living with us here right now from South Africa. And the website address is school-of-adaptive-agriculture.org. So that's school-of-adaptive-agriculture.org with hyphens between the words. And we're also on Facebook. You can find us at Grange School of Adaptive Agriculture. I'm more than happy and, in fact, thrilled and excited to talk to people who are interested in the program. And my email address is manager@grangefarmschool.org. And finally, I would just recommend to anyone who has interest in this kind of a program or in entering the food production system to come and visit us. We're up in Mendocino County. It's a gorgeous ranch. We're on 5,000 acres. And it's a pretty vibrant community that we're a part of. There are 5 other agricultural enterprises on the same ranch, and one of them is a research data-driven garden studying biointensive farming. We have just an amazing community of 35 farmers who all collaborate and contribute to the curriculum here. So any student or any potential interested farmer, I just highly encourage to get in contact and Tell us your story. I love hearing the stories of the backgrounds of these people who are deciding to get into it, and I hope that, you know, we'll be able to answer the question of why everyone's getting into it, in a way that's satisfying one day.
Well, you've done a great job of answering that question. I just have one more question I should have asked you earlier. But if they do get into the program, they come there and live for a period of time?
Yeah, great point. What is the program? So yeah. The program is a 14-week-long residential intensive program. So, you know, we have our students live with us the whole time. And the program runs 5 days a week. We split the day between classroom learning, tutorial-based lessons on those topics I talked about earlier, crops, livestock, business, and industrial arts. And then the rest of the day, we contextualize everything that we've learned either in the field or in the workshop. So all of our students are not only getting that classroom time with our guest instructors, our staff, our mentors, and our experts, but they're also getting a lot of hands-on practical experience doing what we're talking about.
It sounds great, and I really appreciate what you're doing, and I can see that you're filling a need, and I'm just glad you took this time. Ruthie King, the Director of Operations, to join us on Farm to Table Talk. She's got the Grange School of Adaptive Agriculture. Ruthie, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Roger. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for joining the Farm to Table Talk podcast. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe to listen regularly on SoundCloud or iTunes to Farm to Table Talk.